Amy, we've got a bunch of little nieces and nephews between us, but we've also got a catch-all gift that all of our siblings love for their newborns.
You're totally right, and it's Pampers Swaddlers, because Pampers Swaddlers wick wetness away to keep babies drier and subsequently parents happier.
Pampers Swaddlers absorb wetness better versus the leading value brand and provide up to 100% leak-proof skin protection and up to 0% skin irritation.
Pampers Swaddlers are dermatologist approved by the Skin Health Alliance. They're hypoallergenic and they're free of parabens and latex.
Now you can try Swaddlers with new Pampers-free and gentle wipes for healthy baby skin. These wipes won't tear. In fact, they grip mess, shall we say, more firmly and clean better, leaving baby skin dry, soft, and smooth.
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician-recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers Cash has no cash value.
Hello and welcome to Fresh Take from What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret, and today I'm talking to Amy Schoenthal. She is a journalist, marketing consultant, and a contributor to Forbes Women and Harvard Business Review, where she shines a spotlight on leaders who have been historically underestimated yet are doing the work to solve society's biggest problems. I am talking to Amy today about her new book, The Setback Cycle. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
So setbacks, we all have them. They're coming for us. We don't opt into setbacks. What made setbacks for you a topic that you wanted to kind of explore in depth in this book?
It actually took me a while to land on the concept of setbacks as I was coming up with the framework for this book. I knew through all of my interviewing celebrities, senators, business people, leaders, executives, that in almost every telling of their career journey, of their life journey, whatever led them to the really amazing thing that they are lauded for, celebrated for, it seemed like the part of their story that really lit them up and got them excited to start really talking about it and getting into it was when they lifted themselves up after a setback. And I noticed that it wasn't always a mistake they made. So it wasn't all categorized as learning from our mistakes, which is a concept we all know. And it wasn't always some big dramatic trauma. So it couldn't really be categorized under post-traumatic growth, which is another concept that people are somewhat familiar with. And so as I kept talking to people and as I started trying to understand what this common theme was that I was seeing, I talked to psychologists and neuroscientists and coaches. And when I looked up the definition of a setback, I saw that the truest definition of it is a reversal or check in progress. And that was it. Because every story had someone working towards something, moving forward, you know, thinking they're on a path that's going to get them to point B, whatever that point B is, and they were unexpectedly bumped backwards and had to find a new path. And it always seemed that that new path led them to somewhere much more rewarding, much more interesting, and depending on your definition of success, much more successful than where they were originally headed. And so I wanted to know, why does this happen? How can I learn from it? And how can I explain it to others in a way that they can learn from it so that we can all be armed with the tools we need to work through our next inevitable setback?
You kind of touched on my next question, the definition of a setback. I have that note right here, a reversal or check of progress. I think that's helpful when we start, what are we really talking about? But is there a scope that makes something a setback? Like, is there a difference between, let's say, like a bump in the road and a setback or a real tragedy and a setback? Is there a sweet spot where that this applies to? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe some things are so profound that they kind of knock us permanently off the path. And then some things are so small that we don't even register. Like, what is the fat part of the bell curve for the setback that you're defining in this book?
Of course, there's a spectrum of setbacks. Some are the really small everyday setbacks. And if you're a mom, like I know many of your listeners are,
It's really a life of setbacks, people.
It's a life of setbacks that we have, you know, for the most part, chosen. And
right.
A lot of us just think about getting your kid, if you have a young child or a teenager, right, out the door in the morning to school. You go through at least 5 setbacks a day doing that.
Right.
But
right.
There are also other things that come up in our lives that are not setbacks. They are just sad moments, difficult moments, but they're not, again, if you go back to the true definition of setbacks, they might not be things that bump us backwards. They might be obstacles that you overcome. It might be, you know, a loss, you know, a death of someone. That doesn't necessarily classify as a setback. That's just a horrible, painful experience. It could be a setback. And that's the thing. Like, there's really no...
It's wrapped up together. But that does make sense that the setback involves truly like a step backwards. You were heading towards something and you're not just going through like the forest on the way there, which is hard. You're actually having to maybe go back and take a different route forward. We love a metaphor. It helps us understand stuff. Yeah.
We love a visual. We love a visual so that we can understand a concept. And that can be the case for a marriage, you know, when you unexpectedly end a relationship. All of those things you were, you know, maybe it doesn't feel like you're working towards something, but all those future life moments that you pictured as a family unit, that all disappears. And that definitely feels like a setback.
For sure. And you need to find a new path. Yeah.
Exactly. And for others, it feels like relief and freedom. It's really per someone's setback might be your celebration. What I classify as a setback for me might not be a setback at all for you.
Right. Right. And you don't always know. We have my father has an expression, never judge a crossroads. Like, you don't always know. A setback is, I guess, probably feels negative in the immediate, but in the long term, what you find in the book is that for a lot of people, it turned out to be kind of the galvanizing moment for where they were headed. But probably in the immediate, you are going to experience a setback as a negative feeling.
Exactly. And unfortunately, I do not have a way in the book for you to skip over the annoying feeling. Actually, that I encourage people to embrace that feeling, because the second phase of the cycle is embrace.
Well, let's dial in on that first and kind of nerd out on the science for a minute, because we have talked about this on the podcast before, how your brain learns more from setbacks than from successes sometimes. So can you talk about that? Because I think we always say on the podcast, we don't do things because the book told us it would make us better parents. We do things because they actually work. And this, I think, is an example of, it's not just kind of the pablum of everything happens for a reason and this was part of the divine plan. This is actual science.
That's right. And I have, I think in the intro of the book, I clarify that this book is not any sort of everything happens for a reason.
Right. We've thrown that phrase out the window long ago.
Yeah. We're just acknowledging that setbacks are inevitable. And now we have tools to navigate these life experiences that are pretty universal. So your question was about the neuroscience of setbacks.
A neuroscience, yeah.
So Chantel Pratt is a neuroscientist she wrote a book called The Neuroscience of You, and it is fascinating for anyone wanting to go really deep into this topic. But what she told me about setbacks is that she was able to prove in her lab that people who have gone through setbacks are better at reasoning, learning, and problem solving. It makes sense if you really think about it, because when things are going very well, you're not really taking the time to think about how you could do things differently. But when things start to go off the rails or bump you backwards, that's when you start to get creative and use the muscles in your brain that you need for problem solving, reasoning, creativity, innovation, all of that. And every time you experience a setback, your brain actually rewires itself because it's absorbing new information that it's going to use to direct your future action. So if you want me to really go into it, there's a part of your brain called the basal ganglia, and that's the command center. And that's where the brain stores learning and reasoning. everyone knows what a dopamine dip and a dopamine hit is. So our dopamine levels go up and down depending on the atmosphere and the environment around us. And so when we have a negative experience, we have a dopamine dip. That's when we feel sad, we feel uncomfortable. We do not like those. Our brain wants us to always move towards an experience that it thinks will be rewarding and away from these negative experiences. You're always chasing the dopamine hits and avoiding the dips. But it is in those dips where our brain actually changes, absorbs information, and grows and evolves. And that's why if anyone's been through any therapy or, you know, CBT, you have likely heard someone say, embrace the discomfort, you know, feel the feelings, all the stuff. And that's why, because we learn from the dips.
Yeah. And you have an interesting thought about how babies do this and what we can learn from babies. Since we spend so much time with them, people, we might as well be learning something from them. I am talking to Amy Schoenthal. She is the author of The Setback Cycle, and we'll be right back.
Margaret, I've got a go-to baby shower gift that I give whenever there's another newborn in my life. Can you guess what it is?
Amy, three guesses. First two don't count. It's Pampers Swaddlers.
Exactly. Pampers Swaddlers keep baby's skin dry, happy, and healthy. Pampers Swaddlers absorb wetness better than the leading value brand and provide up to 100% leak-proof skin protection and up to 0% skin irritation.
Pampers Swaddlers are dermatologist approved by the Skin Health Alliance, hypoallergenic, and free of parabens and latex.
Try Swaddlers with new Pampers Free and Gentle wipes for healthy baby skin. These wipes are 5 times stronger, gripping mess more firmly, shall we say, and making diaper changes a breeze.
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Then redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers Cash has no cash value. Amy, when I'm dehydrated, I get headaches. I get cranky and I don't feel good in general. Also, I am dehydrated a lot of the time.
Right. Because being good with the water bottle is one thing, but getting that sodium and potassium with the fluids, turns out that is the key to staying optimally hydrated. So whether you're looking to hydrate during your workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. Each box has 16 little stick packs that you can take on the go, whether you're headed to an exercise class, a night out with friends, or a podcasting conference.
And did we mention they come in delicious flavors from raspberry lemonade to cherry pomegranate? Stay hydrated with Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes. Visit sportsresearch.com and use the code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's sportsresearch.com, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate Electrolytes order. So we were talking about how our brain learns from, shall we say, negative experiences, setbacks, kind of the touching the hot stove. Okay, I don't want to do that again. That's really going to be imprinted on your brain. And you use the example of how babies learn this way. And I guess that makes sense, right? Like babies' experience of the world. And kids learn this way too, to a large degree. And I think sometimes we struggle with, I used to put my baby's hands in those little baby mittens, you know, because you don't want them to scratch their face.
Yeah.
And my pediatrician was like, take those mittens off. That's how they learn not to scratch their face, by scratching their face. And you get it. Nobody wants to see their baby with scratches. But the idea that they learn through negative experiences is interesting. And it's also kind of comforting.
It is. But to babies, everything is new. Everything is new. Everything is uncomfortable. Everything is exploration and curiosity and trying new things and failing. The reason I talk about how babies operate, I actually got this from the book Mindset by Carol Dweck. She's the one who coined the term the growth mindset.
Yes. We've talked a lot about growth mindset on this podcast.
Yes, you have. Exactly. And so we know how easy it is to get caught up in a fixed mindset, which is things are as they are. I cannot change. I am good at this. I am bad at this. And you kind of see this as a binary, or like, I scored this in math on my SATs and I scored this in language. And so I am good at this and I am not good at this. And you get caught up into these things and you think the outcomes are just fixed. The growth mindset teaches you that you can change those outcomes. If you, and everything, this is another piece of wisdom that I got from my friend Chantel Pratt, the neuroscientist, everything comes back to motivation. How motivated are you to learn? I am really bad at folding laundry. I could get better at it.
Same.
Yeah, I could get better at it. My husband's really good at it. You know why? He cares to fold his laundry properly and nicely so that it all looks good in his drawers and it's all neat and nice. And I could get better at it, but I am not motivated to. I don't care if my laundry is a little sloppily folded. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I'm bad at this. He's good at this. I could change, but I'm not motivated to. I am, you know, but I always did much better in writing than in science in school. But I was so fascinated by this neuroscience that I dove into it and I learned it. You know what I mean? You can change your outcome if you adopt a growth mindset. I think people use the term growth mindset without like fully understanding what it is, you know?
Yeah, we've had a lot of debates about growth mindset because I think sometimes it gets thrown around as kind of like another thing you're failing at if your kids don't have a growth mindset.
Exactly.
And I think people have set points of growth mindset that are not as malleable as we think, but I think that's right, that you don't take it as like, you have to have a growth mindset about math. And so let's make that happen. It might be very impossible for someone who's never going to be motivated at math.
Yes, it totally depends on your motivation. You could have a growth mindset in one area and not another. Like, I have a growth mindset in a lot of areas of my life, but not in folding laundry.
And you never will. And for that, we salute you. We salute you.
I never will. And that is, and I will fold my laundry and it will not be good. And you know what? I will never fold my husband's laundry.
Yeah, that's how I am too. My husband's an engineer. He likes the sharp creases. I'm like, you do it. Here's your t-shirt pile, kid.
Yep. And that is fine. There is a lot of advantages to being bad at folding laundry.
Works just fine.
Yep.
So in the book, you set up a 4-phase framework for handling setbacks. So let's start walking through, because there's something that we talk again a lot on the podcast here. So what's the first phase?
Establish. Knowing and acknowledging that you are in a setback is not as easy as everyone thinks it is.
It's the hardest. Acknowledging the truth, we often talk about this, is the hardest part of everything. Because it feels sometimes better to like run faster on the hamster wheel and be like, no, 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 nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong with my marriage. Nothing's wrong with my kids. Everything's fine. I don't care. I don't miss my dream of being a blah, blah, blah. Like, this phase of seeing things for the truth, so much harder than we think.
So much harder. I mean, you think a setback is, oh, I lost my job. Oh, investor pulled out of my business. Like, those are the clear setbacks that are very obvious. But more often than not, we are working through setbacks that we are completely unaware of. That's why I have little exercises throughout the book to help you work through the cycle. And one of the things I have in Establish is an alarm clock checklist. And it's meant to wake you up if you think you are sleepwalking through a setback.
Yes, we talked to Dr. Lynetta Willis, who has this concept called stable misery that kind of affects a lot of parents. And I think that a lot of it comes from a lack that you are in a mode often as a parent. You're in a partnership that like you don't really have time to tend. You've got kids who need something constantly every day, and that we miss this step that you talk about really clearly in the book of really taking hard looks at things. And you don't really want to miss 10 years of your life through the busyness of having children. And I think these kind of exercises that you lay out of really working to be an active participant in what's going on in your life, because you can't start fixing a setback if you don't acknowledge that it happens.
If you ignore it, you're just delaying it.
Yes. That's it too. It doesn't even work. That's the bigger problem. Like, if it worked, I'd be like, fine, just keep running on the hamster wheel and ignoring all your problems. But it's going to be waiting for you somewhere.
But on the other hand, so many of us aren't ready to acknowledge that we're in a setback, and we do need to give ourselves grace. And even if you acknowledge it and you recognize that I'm going to have to do this one day, it's okay to say, but not today. Just don't do that perpetually for 10 years feels like too long, you know? Just make sure you do it one day.
Right. That can be very freeing too, is to say, okay, I'm going to really have to figure this out, but this is not the week or the month for it. But acknowledging it is still powerful.
Exactly. I always knew I was going to start my own business. I always knew I was going to age out of the marketing industry over 40, because unfortunately that is the case for most women, especially mothers. And yet I still hung on to my full-time job for as long as I could because it suited me and I benefited from it, even though I knew it was not going to be my long-term plan.
And you talk about that experience, and we'll come back to the framework, but you talk about that in the book, that what happened with your motherhood journey, and you talk about the motherhood penalty. So let's just click on that for a minute before we go back to the framework.
The motherhood penalty, I don't know if it was coined by Claire Kane Miller, who writes for the New York Times. She writes about parenthood and, you know, the culture of motherhood and society's expectations and perceptions of mothers. But it was in an article, I think, gosh, in like the 90s or early 2000s, where the motherhood penalty was coined. And that refers to the loss of wages that a mother in the workforce experiences once she becomes a mother. And everyone talks about the gender pay gap and how women are paid, I forget what it is now, you know, 76 cents on the dollar as compared to men in the workforce. But the gap is more like an ocean when it comes to moms and non-moms, whether it's a woman or a man. Again, I forget the math, but it's like, it might be like 56 cents on the dollar. And then forget it once you go down the scale of marginalized communities, because if you're not white, if you're not cisgender, forget it. Like, it just goes, it is an ocean, not a gap.
Farther and farther down. And that's another setback point that we can think about and acknowledge and figure out through the framework how to come back from, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, that goes back to one thing in your life could be a setback, while another thing in your life could be a celebration. Having a child, for most people, is an intentional decision and worthy of celebration. Incredible personal milestone. You're so happy. And at the same time, it often results in a career setback.
For sure. And marital happiness setback and sleep setback. I mean, a lot of setbacks can be wound up in a positive thing that you actually wanted. And I think part of that is also the acknowledgement of, okay, everything doesn't have to be. I always used to say when I had younger kids, when we were doing the podcast, like the people who are like, and look, at the baby comes down the rainbow into your arms and everything. It's like, that's not my experience. Maybe it's somebody's. I am talking to Amy Schoenthal, and she is the author of The Setback Cycle. And we're going to return and walk through this framework when we get back after this break. Amy, you know me well enough to know that my daily power breakfast is toast with peanut butter on top.
Toast with peanut butter. It's also, by the way, one of my favorite power breakfasts. So we agree on that thing.
We were recently together and we shared some toast with peanut butter. And I'm going to tell you, we used Hero Bread. It adds even more protein and fiber to that combo without adding any more sugar.
Hero Bread has remade the carby, empty calorie bread products into versions that include no net carbs, 0 gram sugar, and fewer calories, plus more protein and fiber, while still being super fluffy and delicious. I was not sure that that particular combination was going to be possible, but Hero Bread has figured it out.
Yeah, this is one I'm glad they let us try. It's like, it really tastes good. I've been trying to add more protein to my diet, and I would have thought that a hamburger rolls was not the place to do that, Amy. But all of Hero Bread's products, from rolls to tortillas to croissants, oui please, offer protein and fiber, 0 to 1 grams of net carbs and 0 grams of sugar.
Start your Hero Bread bundle on their website and get 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use the code motherhood at checkout.
I like this bread, people. It's hero.co and code motherhood for 10% off your order of Hero Bread.
If you like this show, there's a decent chance you'll also enjoy the Shameless Mom Academy. Hi, I'm Sarah Dean, the founder and host of the Shameless Mom Academy. The Shameless Mom Academy is a podcast for moms that centers moms more than it centers your kids. I'm not going to teach you how to make baby food or how to make your 3-year-old or 13-year-old stop having tantrums. Instead, I'm going to bring you back to yourself. For the last 20 years, I've been helping moms through growth and transformation. Inside the Shameless Mom Academy, I help you identify who you are and who you are becoming. Look, motherhood is hard. It brought me to my knees many times and sometimes still does. Returning to who I am and who I am becoming allows me to decide how to show up in all those sticky motherhood moments, but also in all my other relationships and in all the ways I show up in my various communities. So come check out the Shameless Mom Academy wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm willing to bet you'll leave feeling a little inspired and maybe even completely fired up. And you'll probably laugh a few times because I promise we never take ourselves too seriously over here. With 700 episodes to choose from, you're likely going to find something that sparks and speaks to you inside the Shameless Mom Academy.
Okay, so we talked about establish. That's the first part of the four.
There's a lot there.
A lot there. How did I get here? Really asking questions, right? And you have exercises in the book about really how to examine this phase. And then we move on to the second phase, which is embrace.
This is the most difficult phase. This is the part where you stop ignoring your setback and you stop running away from it and you sit down and you embrace the discomfort. Part of this phase is working through the stress response. Everyone thinks of the stress response as fight or flight, but there's actually a third option. You freeze. You do not know whether to keep going, to move forward, to, you know, retreat, and you are just frozen.
I'm a freezer, big time freezer.
We all are, of course. You're sort of, I mean, decisions are hard. Decisions are hard no matter what. And you're always afraid you're making the wrong one. And that's what causes so many of us to freeze. And I have a part of the book that says, here's how to thaw yourself out if you're stuck in a freeze. And so many of us, as we're floating along in our setback, you know, we don't want to ask the hard questions, but this is the phase where you have to ask the hard questions because that's where you're going to get the information. This is where the growth happens. This is the dopamine dip that we talked about. This is the dip. So let's figure out why it's a dip. Yeah, I lost my job, but it wasn't just about the finances and the health insurance and, you know, whatever other logistical things you want to list. It's about my loss of identity.
My identity, right.
My self-doubt that creeps up. Was I really caught up in a round of layoffs or did they really just not value me? And this was an excuse, you know, like, what, did I do this thing wrong? Should I have done this better? You have to really dig to get the clues because those clues are going to help you chart the next path forward. We have to get really introspective.
I think especially for women and maybe especially for moms in the communities that are close, which can be great for us and give us a lot of support. You talk a lot about the shame in this part of the cycle. And I think for a lot of women, we still sort of carry the thing of, well, I'm trying something that is outside of being this wife and mother. And then failing at it just feels, even to say failing at it, having a setback within it can sometimes feel like, what was I even doing in the first place?
Yeah. Like, why did this, you either fall into a cycle of blame or a spiral of shame. You're either shaming yourself for not being better, doing better, working harder, you know, foreseeing this happening. You're either shaming yourself or you're blaming someone else. Well, if that person hadn't done that, I wouldn't be in this position. And it is so easy when you are in a setback to cast blame and think that this is totally someone else's fault or shame yourself and think it is totally your fault and it would have been preventable if you had just done one thing differently. And guess what? It is always somewhere in between.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. And I also think that people, we have to sit with other people's blaming of us. There are a lot of people who like it when people fail. And I mean, I've been guilty of this, you know, with like someone who I'm like, oh, look at how well they're doing. And then if it goes badly for them, I can get a little jolt of like, eh, well, I guess I'm not so bad. Look at they stink. Like giving that energy out. And we accept it too, that you know, I've been an entertainer for most of my life. So I've certainly had a lot of experiences of being out there and failing pretty spectacularly. And I think it's just painful. And we do have to accept whether it's maybe an in-law or a sister or somebody who's looking at us and saying like, hey, I'm getting a little joy from your failure. It's a really hard part, this embracing. Because we don't really want to embrace it. And our brain is telling us, like, run from the pain.
Totally. And no one's harder on ourselves than our inner critic. And maybe your inner critic, and you have to visualize who is that inner critic? What do they look like? Who are they? Maybe it's based on that in-law. Maybe it's based on that neighbor, whoever is like, you think is criticizing you most harshly. Maybe they really are. And if you visualize that inner critic, you can disarm them. You can absolutely disarm them. This is not just like woo-woo fun activities. This is a proven psychological concept. Give them a name, give them a face, give them a whole personality. My inner critic, her name is Roz.
I liked this idea. Yes.
Yeah. Her name is Roz. She's like, I'm from Long Island and I just have this vision of like my friend's mom standing on the stoop or like smoking a cigarette and being like, get back in the backyard. Don't ride your bike too far away. Come on, get in the backyard. And I don't know why that's me. That's my inner critic. Like, don't go write a book. You should just be like sitting here in the backyard. I don't know why. But who's your inner critic? Name them. Give them a whole persona, because then when it comes, again, in the form of someone else, in the form of your own inner dialogue, you can disarm them.
Then we get to step three, which is explore.
This is the best phase.
I like it. And it centers a lot around curiosity, which is a word we've used in a lot of contexts. And I think it can be really helpful, like the idea of curiosity and what that looks like.
Oh, yeah. And we go into big C curiosity. This isn't just like, oh, I'm curious about that thing I read about in an article. This is like, no, I liked playing team sports as a kid, not just because I liked kicking a ball around a field, but because of the camaraderie and the leadership skills that I developed and the friends I made and feeling part of something that was beyond just me as an individual. You know, this is where we get really deep. I like to tell people to go into their idealistic selves and think about what they would do. You know, what would you do if money was no object?
That's what I was just with a group of youngs and they were telling me about, you know, they're all graduating and what's next. And I kept asking people because someone asked me and I thought it was such a good question. What would it look like if you could write it? You could write it with no obstacles. Like, what would you do with this, you know, interesting thing that you speak this language and you have this medical degree and you're interested in journalism? Like, what would that look like if you could imagine the best case scenario?
That's so good. Yeah, exactly. Like, how good could it possibly get? Think about that. And that's okay. Then take that idealistic version of what you want to do. And how can you bring elements of that? Obviously not the whole thing. I want to be, you know, a pop star. Sure, you probably can't be a pop star. I mean, maybe you can. But can you go to an open mic night? Like, I don't know. Can you take a voice lesson? Because there's going to be something in that. And you're like, oh my God, I just got fired from my job. Why are you telling me to take a voice lesson? You are going to learn something about yourself if you explore your deep-rooted curiosity. No matter what, there is always something to gain. There's a quote in the book from Norma Kamali. She's a fashion designer. She's incredible. And she was one of the most fascinating people I've ever interviewed. And she has this great quote. And she said to me, if you want to do something, go out and do it boldly, and you will be so amazed by how capable you are. And that is the point of the explore phase, to imagine how good it can get. And that's what leads you to get clarity on the path forward and how we cycle into the last phase of the setback cycle, emerge.
Mm-hmm. And this is taking action and figuring out what's next. And I love the concept of the North Star that you talk about. So how does that work?
Once you have gone through the entire setback cycle and you've realized a little bit more about what's important to you, what you want to take from that experience and what you want to kind of throw away, it's a really good moment to get clear on your values and your North Star. Your North Star is really what drives everything you do. I know so many people, so many women, so many mothers who run their own business and they have a picture of their kids on the wall next to them because they're doing all this work so that they can create comfort for their family, provide for their family, hopefully create generational wealth for their children. And that is what drives everything they do. That's why they deal with the invoicing and the accounting and all the mundanity that it takes to run a business, because they're doing it for their children. And so what's your North Star? The woman I talk about in the North Star chapter, which I believe is the last chapter of the book, her name's Kate Luzio. She created a company called Luminary, which is a professional networking and development company for women at all stages of their careers. And her North Star, she had a almost 2-decade career in banking where she saw the difference in opportunities for women and men. And she just wanted to mentor women and give them access to all the things that she saw in terms of, you know, how much they could be capable of. if they just were given the right opportunities and access that she felt, you know, she had to search for and fight for, but she was able to do it. And she wanted to extend that to the women she saw struggling. She does that in Luminary. Her North Star is creating advancement and opportunity for women in the workforce at every stage, at every phase of their career, whether you are in the corporate world or an entrepreneur or deciding what to do somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm. And the book is full of anecdotes and kind of case studies of people dealing with these kind of setbacks. Lots of strong, powerful women who've had these kind of setbacks. Talk about a few of the other people you talk about. How did you find these people? What drove you to the really wide range of people you profile in the book?
I found them mostly because I had either written about them or interviewed them for Forbes or Harvard Business Review throughout the course of my writing career. The folks who I wrote about in the book, so many of them are moms. So many of them are addressing the motherhood penalty, the caregiver crisis. We have Reshma Saujani, who she actually created Girls Who Code, which aims to bridge the gender gap in STEM education. But then when the pandemic hit and she, along with so many other moms, found themselves toggling between work and remote learning for their young children, she really saw firsthand how our society places very little value on the labor of mothers and how unpaid work of mothers is the economy's safety net. And so she created an organization called Moms First, which is aiming to advocate for legislation at the federal and local government level to try to get some legislation passed that would better protect and acknowledge this labor of mothers that often goes so unseen and undervalued.
And there's so much that's universal in this book, but as we focus here on motherhood, what do moms have to take from this work for, I think not just for themselves, I think that part is clear, but I think there's a lot to take away for our kids and maybe especially our daughters about how we teach them about how to approach the problems that they deal with, either on a social level, school level, rejection from college, all sorts of things that our kids are going to face.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much in this book that's appropriate for kids. It's not just a book for adults.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this framework is for anyone at any age. And you can take the framework, and if you understand the psychology behind it and why it works and some of these exercises and some of the probing questions that are going to get you through your setback, you can absolutely use them to help your kids through their setbacks. Why did not getting into college impact you so much? What's something you're in a really low moment? What's something that can really, that you really enjoy that can go light you up? What is your North Star? All of the things, you know, how do you adopt a growth mindset? All of these things we've talked about today, totally applicable to raising kids with resilience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you have those frameworks, sometimes we get lost in those conversations. It's okay. Things happen for a reason. Oh, this doesn't matter, that we start saying things that are kind of actively unhelpful. And that when you have a book like this with a system, it can be really helpful to say, oh, this is a setback. Let me help run through these steps and then give the gift to my child to say, you can use this throughout your life. These are four steps when you hit a step back.
Exactly. We have scripts for you.
Yes, here we go. We've solved it, as we always do on this podcast. No more problems for anybody.
Totally.
So Amy, tell us where our listeners can find more of your writing and your work and where they can find the book.
I have a website, thesetbackcycle.com, and that gives you everything you need to know about the book, along with a list of retailers. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble, Target, your local bookstore, bookshop.org, and of course, Amazon. And my writing is also on that website. If you poke around, I try to keep it up to date with my latest articles. And you can also find me on Instagram at Amy Show and LinkedIn.
Awesome. We will link to all of those places in the show notes, as always. And Amy, thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
The book is The Setback Cycle, out now. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Margaret, it's an exciting news day.
An exciting news day indeed, Amy.
A few years ago, we launched our first spinoff podcast, Toddler Purgatory, hosted by the hilarious Blair Brooks and Molly Lloyd.
And guess what? Now Blair and Molly are back with their all-new podcast, Unsticking It.
You know Blair and Molly as two busy moms and actors, and somewhere between potty training and the pandemic, they both felt like they lost their creative kaboom.
In their new podcast, Unsticking It, they are going to talk about how all of us can get back to what lights us up after motherhood. Amy, I need this.
Me too. And Blair and Molly will be talking to fellow imaginative minds. We're talking actors, artists, and creators of all kinds about how we can all unstick ourselves from whatever muck we're stuck in.
Follow, subscribe, and listen to Unsticking It wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Hi there, I'm Andrea Owen, self-help author with 19 translations of my books, global keynote speaker, and life coach. My podcast, Make Some Noise, has been serving up self-help in a simple-to-digest way for the last decade. The topics brought in each episode are practical and easy to implement around topics such as working through fears that keep you stuck, different modalities of therapy, managing your negative self-talk, and more. We bring you guest experts, solo episodes, and I even coach listeners on the air around relatable struggles. I also do my best to weave my sense of humor into some heavy topics because, let's face it, life can be pretty hard, and it's so much better when we can have some fun while walking through our challenges. Whether you're seasoned in personal development or just starting out, Make Some Noise podcast will help you become the best version of yourself, the person you're proud of when you look in the mirror and show up in your life. Simply search Make Some Noise with Andrea Owen wherever you listen to your podcasts.